Hello and welcome to the commentary for Lesson 321, 1 Kings chapter 16. So we are going through the kings of Israel, which is the northern territory, the 10 tribes under the leadership of Jeroboam. We remember that. And then Jeroboam, his reign ends. Let me go back to 1 Kings 14 just to kind of remember where we were at. Jeroboam reigned in Israel 22 years. When he died, his son Nadab became the next king. Now, Nadab ruled for just a short time, like 2 years. And then Baasha, it says in 1 Kings 15, that Baasha, son of Ahijah, who I believe was the prophet, I mean, the prophet's name could have just been someone maybe named after that prophet. But remember, Ahijah was the prophet that gave the bad news to Jeroboam's wife. Remember? She went dressed up as someone else and he said, yeah, give your husband this message for me. So anyways, his son is Baasha, assuming it's the same Ahijah. So Baasha plotted against Nadab and assassinated him while he and the Israelite army were laying siege to the Philistine town of Gibbethon. Baasha killed Nadab in the third year of King Asa's reign in Judah. It keeps doing that. Every time we read about a new king, it kind of lets you know where they're at as far as how long Asa has been in power in Judah, which is essentially Judah and Benjamin, the two tribes. So it just kind of lets you know the flow, I guess, the timeline. But anyways, it says he immediately, once Baasha became the king of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, he immediately slaughtered all the descendants of King Jeroboam so that not one of the royal family was left, just as the Lord had promised concerning Jeroboam by the prophet Ahijah from Shiloh. So that's ironic, isn't it? That Baasha ends up killing Jeroboam and all of his descendants, and that what we find out when we read in today's reading in chapter 16, that essentially the same exact thing ended up happening to Baasha. So a cruel twist of fate, and definitely kind of, you know, what goes around comes around, right? So we start off in 1 Kings 16, and we learn that the prophet Jehu now is speaking to Baasha and says, I lifted you out of the dust to make you ruler of my people Israel, but you have followed the evil example of Jeroboam. You have provoked my anger by causing my people Israel to sin, so now I will destroy you and your family, just as I destroyed the descendants of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Now here's what's interesting. God is telling Baasha, see, Baasha thinks that he killed Jeroboam. And here God is telling him through a prophet, oh no, it wasn't you, it was me. God can work even through bad people to bring about his purpose, his greater purpose. And sometimes that greater purpose has to start with evil people being killed. And sometimes he uses some evil people to kill other evil people. And it's all part of his perfect plan. And we don't understand it, but that's, we see that in scripture. So he's letting Baasha know that, you think you did that, but I'm the one that did that. Basically, you were a pawn. You know, Baasha also made personal choices. And he chose to follow in the evil example of Jeroboam. Now, we can learn from our mistakes. Sometimes people learn from the mistakes of their parents and do the opposite. Or more often than not, they fall into the same traps as their parents because they maybe didn't know any better. Maybe that's all they knew. And they fell into the same sequence. of events. And we see that here with Baasha. And then his son, Elah, after Baasha dies, because God certainly does bring that around, just as the prophet Jehu says he did. God certainly keeps his promises. And it says in verse 7, the message from the Lord against Baasha and his family came through the prophet Jehu, son of Hanani. It was delivered because Baasha had done what was evil in the Lord's sight, just as the family of Jeroboam had done. Then we get to Elah. He rules over Israel, but he only rules for a short time. It looks like 2 years. And then Elah gets killed by Zimri, who is employed by him. It says he commanded half of the royal chariots. So, yeah, he was in Elah's army. Anyways, he was one of the commanders. So Zimri walks in and kills Elah when he's drunk. So then Zimri becomes the next king. And then Zimri immediately killed the entire royal family of Baasha, leaving him not even a single male child. That's how all of Baasha and his male descendants died, just as the Lord had stated through the prophet Jehu. So Zimri begins to rule over Israel, but his reign only lasts 7 days, if you can believe that. Because it says in verse 15, the army of Israel was then attacking the Philistine town of Gibbethon when they heard that Zimri had committed treason and had assassinated their king, King Elah. That very day, they chose Omri, commander of the army, as the new king of Israel. So Omri led the entire army of Israel up from Gibbethon to attack Tirzah instead, which was Israel's capital. And Zimri knew the odds were against him. He knew he was going to be taken over. And so he ends up committing suicide. Instead of being taken and killed, he decides to take his own life, it seems. He went into the citadel of the palace and burned it down over himself and died in the flames. Whew, okay. And then verse 19 says, for he too had done what was evil in the Lord's sight. He followed the example of Jeroboam in all the sins he had committed and led Israel to commit. So you see a pattern here that these kings are getting worse and worse and worse, but they're all consistently following the example of Jeroboam. And it keeps referring to worthless idols, and they are getting into deeper and deeper sin. Okay, so Omri, the commander of the army, now becomes king. And apparently, the people of Israel are splitting. And some of them are supporting a guy named Tibni, and I don't know what his, like, who he is exactly, but he's mentioned here. And a lot of people supported him, and the other half supported Omri. But of course, Omri's supporters defeated the supporters of Tibni. Tibni was killed. We don't know the exact story there. But Omri began to rule over Israel, and he reigned 12 years in all, 6 of them in Tirzah, and then he eventually moves everybody out to Samaria. Now, he bought the land Samaria, so that was a strategic move because he could, if he owned all the land, then he could do everything exactly as he wanted. I'm going to read something from Easy English that talks about Omri's rule. It's interesting. It says, although the report of Omri's life is brief, Omri was the most important king of Israel. He was a great political leader. He established a strong capital for Israel, and he was a powerful leader of the army. But the Bible does not praise Omri for his many skills. It was Omri's behavior that mattered to God. And Omri's behavior was even worse than the kings who ruled Israel before him. All these kings had refused to obey God's law. They did not love God as David had done. Instead, they loved ambition and power. And now the family that ruled Israel was even more wicked. Omri bought the hill called Samaria, and he made it into a great city. It became the capital of the country. He made some very fine buildings there. The city would be very difficult for enemies to capture. During the first 4 years of Omri's rule, he fought against Tibni. We do not know how Tibni died. Perhaps he died in battle. Omri was worse than Jeroboam in his attitude to religion. So yes, Omri did all kinds of great things, but the Bible doesn't talk about those because, like it says in Easy English, that's not really what mattered to God. What mattered to God was in verse 25 when it says, "But Omri did what was evil in the Lord's sight, even more than any of the kings before him." So they're getting progressively worse. And then Omri, when he dies, he's buried in Samaria. His son Ahab becomes next king. Ahab is the worst of them all. He reigned in Samaria for 22 years. It says, "But Ahab, son of Omri, did what was evil in the Lord's sight, even more than any of the kings before him. His was so bad, he married Jezebel, who was a wicked queen, the daughter of Ethbaal. They had idol worship. So the relationship between King Ethbaal and the worship of Baal, I don't know what that is. But there's a similarity in the name there. I don't know if that means anything. It's likely it does. They are really into their worship of Baal. Maybe he's named after that god. Who knows? But it says, "First, Ahab built a temple and an altar for Baal in Samaria. Then he set up an Asherah pole." We know how God feels about those. "He did more to provoke the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than any of the other kings of Israel before him." Wow. So we're at a pretty bad state of affairs in the northern kingdom of Israel. And then in verse 34, it says, "During his reign, Ahab's reign, that Hiel, a man from Bethel, rebuilt Jericho." Why is this mentioned? It's kind of just plopped in there in the scripture. But here's what's interesting. It says, "When he laid its foundations, it cost him the life of his oldest son, Abiram. And when he completed it and set up its gates, it cost him the life of his youngest son. This all happened according to the message from the Lord concerning Jericho, spoken by Joshua, son of Nun." Now, when I read that, I thought, okay, apparently God doesn't want them rebuilding Jericho, because if he was punished by losing his sons, and of course it's timely that he lost one at the beginning and one at the end, that has to mean something, right? So here's what Easy English says about this. "Hiel is another example of someone who did not obey God. He built Jericho city again. The reconstruction of Jericho was an act to oppose God. God told the Israelites to destroy Jericho completely when they first entered the country called Canaan. That action was the start of God's punishment against the people in Canaan. God was punishing them for their wicked behavior and because they worshiped false gods." So now here we have them, the Israelites, doing the same thing. And that's what God warned them against, right? So during Ahab's rule, the Israelites were worshiping the same false gods as the people from Canaan had worshiped. And they were guilty of the same wicked behavior too. So that is why Hiel wanted to rebuild Jericho. And the result of his actions were the death of his sons. You can read Joshua's prophecy in Joshua 6:26, it says. And I do want to read that. Hold on. Oh, yeah. So in Joshua 6:26, the heading of this section is called "The Fall of Jericho." Verse 26 says, "At that time Joshua invoked this curse. May the curse of the Lord fall on anyone who tries to rebuild the town of Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn son, he will lay its foundation. At the cost of his youngest son, he will set up its gates." Wow. That was very specific, wasn't it? I just now put that together. So, wow. Yes. So that is bad. We are in a very bad place here with these kings. And incidentally, Asa has outlasted them all, right? We had Rehoboam in Judah, the king of Judah, and then we had Abijah for a short period of time. Asa reigns for 41 years. So that's where we leave off. We're getting ready for Christmas. I know I haven't been so good about making my recordings this month. You know, us ladies, we kind of have like a second job at Christmas. The months of November and December, just getting everything ready. And I've been very busy, and I've had six kids. I don't know about you guys, but there's a bunch of stuff going around. So hopefully you're staying healthy and looking forward to Christmas. I know I am. That's it for today. I hope you all have a great day. I will talk to you soon.